Bonnie Johnny, everyone. This is Professor Amon-Ra, Professor Emeritus of California State University Africana Studies Department, along with the good doctor and Rasha Key Maskani, and our special guest, who I'll introduce in a second. But this is the Conscious Corner program that deals with the positive aspects of the African-American community, their contributions to the forward flow of our liberation and development as a people, and their contributions in the various forms of human activities that illustrates the best of us as an African people. We are proud to have as our special guest, a special person in my life and friend, one of Compton's greatest athletes, that emerged not only as an outstanding individual, but he's an author now, but as a great athlete in track and in basketball. But he's also a great father and a great a husband to his wife and to the community. Many times in Compton, people focus on a lot of the negativity, but you know, it's just like this is something, a product that was produced in Compton and rose to the heights of the 1968 Olympics as one of the youngest athletes to be selected to participate in the Olympics, and as a high jumper, jumping 7 feet in those days. And this was before they were jumping backwards and stuff. This was the real high jump. And so we are proud to have him here. And as I said, just an all-around athlete, all-around good brother that had fought, who had dealt with prostate cancer and dealt with dialysis and dealt with a little heart issue. But he has overcome all that. And the title of his book is How I Got Over, a 1968 Olympian. He's just a college graduate, excellent in computer technology, and loves to travel. In his book, he said, they say, we're getting ready to go somewhere, he'd be the first one to go. And so without further delay, we're going
to
let
ready to go.
Brother Reynaldo Brown, 1968 Olympian, tell us a little bit more about himself, his family, as well as the things that he got over in his growth and development to be one of our greatest gifts to this, in the city of Compton. So, Reynaldo, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to, you know, be on your show today. I really appreciate it. Again, my name is Reynaldo Brown, and I'm a high jumper. I was a high jumper at the 1968 Olympic Games at Mexico City. And a unique thing about making that Olympic team, I made it as a junior in high school, at Compton High School. You know, when people were saying I was too young, I probably wouldn't make it, wouldn't go far, but, you know, I knew that I would, and mainly because, you know, I had that drive, and it was something that I wanted to do. You know, I had a dream, and I had a goal, and I had a plan, you know, to get there, and all three worked out for me, and without those three things, you know, in life, with those three things in life, everybody can kind of go, you know, to the fullest in their life that they want to do if they had those three things. And that's what I had. And, you know, the unique thing about it, I've been wanting to write this book for a long time. I started in 1976. And I wrote the book because of all the traveling I was doing. I wanted to write the book because of all the traveling I was doing as a youngster and, you know, going all around the world, hitting all seven continents. And not a dime in my pocket, but I seen the world, you know, through track and field. And, you know, I kind of, you know, after I jumped a while, I kind of wanted to, you know, get a job after jump, So I went to Hughes Aircraft Company, and I, you know, worked there for about 20 years or so, you know, at Hughes Aircraft in El Segundo. And, you know, and as I was working, people knew that I was a high jumper, and they kept asking me, ah, well, why aren't you going to meets or anything? My supervisors there, and I told them I was, you know, I wanted to work. They said, well, we want to see you jump. So if you have a meet, let us know. We can work things out. So they worked it out for me. So I was able to jump while working at Hughes Aircraft. And I was grateful for that. And so I kind of put the book aside. And, you know, and I kept thinking about, you know, writing some parts in it. And but I never did until around, I don't know, 1982 or so. When I got married to my wife, Carol, she saw it sitting around. She said, what is this? I said, it's a book that I started writing on. She said, well, let's get started and do it some more, you know. So anyway, we did it, but we got busy. You know, the Olympic Committee, they kept me busy, which was great, for another, I don't know, 15 years or so. And then again, just before that, the virus came out, you know, COVID-19, we started working on it again. So that was in 2019, and that's when we finished the book. And 2020, we finished it. And so I was, you know, debating what to name it and, you know, what to put on it. And, you know, my wife, Carol, she did all the editing in the book. You know, I just told her, I just dictated what I wanted to say, and she put it all together. And, you know, and we went from there. We did have sponsors and all, you know, people that promoted, you know, to do the book, but for some reason, you know, where they put it in order for me, you know, because a lot of stuff, you know, went to the front, went to the back, went to the middle, whatever. So they organized it. And, you know, from that point on, everything started rolling. Now, the picture that you see on the front, that's me jumping at Mexico City. And so the reason I put that on there, you know, I guess to grab some attention, because people want to know probably how I got over that bar. But the real truth of the story is how I got over my medical problem, you know, and it was through sports that it helped me get over my medical problem, because I had to have, you know, take chances like I did in sports. I had to be patient like I did in sports, you know, and all that happens in real life. So I used everything to get my life better through, you know, going through dialysis, going through prostate cancer, and going through my heart issue. I had 3 block arteries, and, you know, so I had to get open heart surgery the whole bit. But, you know, each time that I did that, went through those procedures, I stayed positive like I did in track and field. And it really helped me to, you know, track and field really helped my life, you know, in real life, how to go through problems and what have you. And so I continued to, you know, get better. I took my time at getting better. But the crazy thing about it, what made me really write the book too, again, you know, I had many reasons, but again, I'm laying in the hospital. I was at Loma Linda, and I went into emergency that night. I couldn't breathe. And, you know, I was in bad shape, so to speak, the doctors were saying, because I had the prostate problem, I had the heart problem, and I was on dialysis. So I had 3 things wrong with me, maybe 4. And the doctors, they didn't know where to start, you know. So before they took me up to a room that night, one of the doctors said, well, I hope this guy is still here with us tomorrow. You know, and I was not in any pain or anything, but I guess they figured I was in pain because of the, you know, things I was going through. But I, you know, I felt like I did now, no pain, but, you know, I knew I had a lot of things wrong. And anyway, they took me up to the room. And when I heard one of the doctors say, I hope this guy is still with us tomorrow, I said, I'm not going nowhere. What's going on? You know, I feel good. So anyway, Saturday morning, the next morning, I went in Friday night. And next morning, the doctors, they came into my room and they looked at me because I was sitting up. And they said, oh, you the same guy we saw last night? I said, yeah. And one of the doctors said, well, you ought to write a book. Yeah, I already started my book. So, you know, I decided to, you know, just jot down everything that I went through, you know, and mainly because what I was going through at that time, it all happened in 2004. I went on dialysis. And when I was on dialysis, nobody had any answers for me. You know, I asked questions and nobody can give me an answer. The doctors was just saying, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. You know, and I'm sitting in a room with 20 people, you know, on dialysis. And a lot of times I would see people, you know, chairs where people were missing from their chair. And that was a bad sign, because when that happened, I mean, that maybe that person passed on. They never told us. And anyway, I figured it out, and you know, and I got the news that those people died. It was like 10 that died. So I said to myself that I didn't want to go out like that. So I said I was going to try to, you know, do things that they couldn't give me an answer. So I was just going to try to do my own thing, like I did in track and field. You know, I take chances. So that's when I started taking chances, doing things. And I kept hearing voices, you know, in my head. And felt like it was coming down from God. You know, he'd say, try this, do that. And in my book, I was saying that, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I did try this. And I only did it because people, you know, didn't have answers. So my thing was to kind of jot down everything that I did and tell people that I took these chances. They may work for you, but they may not, but they work for me. And I want to let them know that, you know, you can do different things in life, but, you know, the doctors, they, you know, have, you know, their own way of doing things, and it's by the book, and I understand that. You know, so when I did things and I started getting better, then they thought that maybe I was taking all the medicines that they were giving me. And I told them no, because I had never taken aspirin before. And they were trying to fill me up with all these pills and what have you. And I said, well, let me try something different. So I started walking, you know, and I noticed that nobody in dialysis was walking. But the, you know, crazy thing about dialysis is it's a thing, you know, where they go in, they take your blood out, you sit on this machine and it, you know, it cleans your blood, but it takes it out and put it in. But you'd be so tired when you come home that you don't want to do nothing. And I know that, Amon, you went through this and you've probably seen it happen.
I'm still doing it.
Yeah, I hear you. And so I had to take that chance, you know, getting up walking. But I asked the doctors before, I said, should I get up and walk? They said, no, we want you to rest. And I said, well, heck, how can I get better? You know, I started thinking about sports again. I said, I can't get my muscle tone back or, you know, feel good if I'm resting, because all I'm doing is deteriorating. And I said, I'm going to try to walk and, you know, push myself through it like I did, you know, when I first started sports. I didn't know a thing about what I was doing, but coach kept saying, you got hurt, push through it. So I pushed through it, you know, through dialysis and whatever else I was going through. And like I said, it all worked for me. And I was grateful for God for, you know, sending me all these different messages. And my thing was not to do, you know, I had something come in my head that said, don't do half, don't do 3/4 or whatever. It just said, do a fourth, so a little bit. So I just do a little bit. But I was still so tired, I couldn't walk from, you know, the bedroom. It's a, what, 10x12 room or whatever. I couldn't walk to the next wall without, you know, getting tired. So somebody told me to grab a chair and walk with it. You know, so when I get tired, sit down. And that's exactly what I did. I walked from, you know, wall to wall or room to room or whatever. When I got tired, I sat down. I didn't go any further. I didn't say, okay, I'm going to take one more step because, you know, it might have been my last step. So I stopped. And you got to listen to your body, you know, and you know, like I say, you just got to, you know, just be willing to stop when you say stop. And I just stopped. And then I started getting better each day. You know, it took, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks before I could get past that 12x12. But I had the patience, you know, like I did trying to learn to high jump. You know, it wasn't easy. It was a tough thing. But, you know, I knew how to, you know, pace myself. And through everything that I went through, I just paced myself, and it worked for me. And like I tell people, you know, it worked for me, but it may not work for you because you might have more things wrong. The only thing I had was just, you know, the prostate. I didn't have diabetes. I didn't have, you know, other issues. I had heart problems. But like I said, the only way you can get that better is you got to move. And I move lightly, you know, not heavy or not doing, you know, trying to, you know, get back to where I was or anything. I knew it was going to be a slow process. It all worked. And, you know, I was getting happy about, you know, the way my body was, you know, coming back. And then I started, you know, going outside walking. But I carried my chair with me. So if I walked down the block and I got tired, I sat out. And then I came back, you know. But my goal was to walk 3 miles. And I was wondering how I was going to do that. But something told me just be patient. And so I did that for about a month, you know, walking maybe one block or half a block. And then, you know, stretching it out a little bit, stretching it out until I got to, you know, 1 mile. And then I do that for another month or so until I got to 3 miles, you know, and it worked for me. And I can see the difference. The doctors thought the medicines which they was giving me was helping. But a lot of times, like I said, they told me that I had to take these medicines because everybody on dialysis, this is what they do. But, you know, if you don't have what all these other people have, then it was no sense in, you know, in my opinion. You know, like I said, it worked for me. No sense in taking it because I didn't have diabetes. And I didn't have, you know, other issues that other people had. And, you know, and it worked for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then I told Carol, I said, everything that I went through, I said, I asked her to do an update letter, and everything that I went through, I wanted my nephews, uncles, and cousins, you know, to know what I did to, you know, get better. Mm-hmm. And if they had prostate problems, you know, I gave them the signs of what, you know, may happen to them to, you know, get help. Because when I was coming up, my father and uncles and, you know, grandfather and all them, they didn't say anything about, you know, prostate. If you can't pee, you know, that you got a problem. So everybody kept it a secret. But I wanted, you know, for this generation below me to understand what's going on in their life. So, and we did that for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, you know. Carol wrote up update letters to everybody, and everybody was enjoying it, you know. And I was getting a lot of calls from people that, you know, went through something. And, you know, if I could help them, I would give them my advice. And I always told them that, you know, it worked for me and you'd probably have to find a way for something to work for you, you know, because our bodies are different. And I know an athlete's body is way different than, you know, just a person who comes in and never done anything. You know, sports or anything. Our bodies heal different. And the doctors, they didn't believe it because every time I come in, when I was taking dialysis, if my, one of the points was my breathing and my heart rate, it went down like 44, 45. And the minute it went down to that, then they would rush and want to put the oxygen in my, you know, nose or what have you. And I said, well, I'm not having a tough time breathing or anything. I'm doing okay. This is what we always do in dialysis when it goes past 50 or something, you know, because the machine will make buzz or whatever. And I told them I didn't need it. And finally, they started believing me, and they wouldn't give me the oxygen. You know, they kept saying, oh, yeah, he's an athlete. We're going to treat him different. And that's what they have to do. You know, everybody's not the same. So, you know, if you can get away with different, you know, things that they ordinarily do, then you should do it, you know, in order, in my opinion, again, to make yourself better. Because, you know, a lot of times, like I said, they just do things by the book. And I did get a kidney transplant, you know, and when I got my kidney transplant, I guess my creatinine was supposed to go down to, I don't know, 1.2 2 or something. But mine stayed at 0.2 when I got the kidney transplant. They thought it was really something wrong. And what they found out was they never treated an athlete, you know, 6'6 or better, or 6'5 or better, you know, because they always put kidneys in. And they said, well, if we can chop, you know, they got to the point where my doctor, he really had to, you know, do, you know, treat me different. He had to make a new chart, you know, by making the numbers different from a guy 6 feet, or 6'2", or 6'3". Because for some reason, our bodies are different. And, you know, it's, your heart rate is going to be different. Your kidney creatinine and all that stuff is going to be different. And he finally found out that, and he started telling another doctor, yeah, we got to treat him different. He's an athlete, and we never treated anybody, you know, 6'5 or better. And they told me that, you know, just jokingly, I have a real good doctor, you know. And he said, well, if we probably cut 6 inches off your leg, then your creatinine would drop, you know. And, you know, which was true, because, like I said, they had never really treated, you know, a person, they never put a kidney to what they said at Loma Linda. Well, those doctors didn't, you know, never treated a person and put a kidney at lower than, you know, that 6'5 or better. So it's just different things that I went through and different things that I wanted people to know how I got over, you know, so not getting over the high jump part, but getting over some of the things that I went through medically. And I'm satisfied with it. And I started playing basketball again. Actually, I was playing basketball with 3 black artists. I was running, you know, we was running whole court, half court, you know, and they kept wondering, how are you doing all this and you're not winning? I couldn't give them my answer, but they, you know, started taking, you know, pictures and all that, and they found out that new veins and what have you was growing, you know, inside the chest. So blood was, you know, I don't know if they call it a miracle or just, you know, God, you know, it just happens to me. But anyway, they found out that new veins was growing in my heart, and it was, you know, bringing blood into me, and it didn't bother me. You know, but before I got my kidney transplant, they said I'd have to have the open heart surgery, you know, to clear up all that stuff. So anyway, I went on and had the open heart surgery in June of 2016. And then I had the transplant in December 7th of June 16th also. So it was like a day after my birthday. So it was like a birthday gift, you know, getting kidney transplant. And from that point on, I've just been, you know, really feeling good. And, you know, things just worked out for me.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, we also have the co-host, Tarbe, and he's the former vice principal and outstanding educator and coach. Football at Linwood, and I believe he'll tell you all the other schools he participated in. And I don't know if you know of him. He went to one of the star football players in 71. And that's our brother, Joe Hembrick. And but before we start with Joe Hembrick, in light of this being Women History Month, Black women with a Black woman focus. We have Miss Audrey Musgrove, one of our guests tonight. And we're going to let her start. With the first
come here.
Is that my Audrey? Or is that somebody else?
Yeah, I'm not ready for this.
I don't know how to use this, babe. Okay. Is this Amin Ra?
Yes, it's just John
Audrey. I'm on. I don't have Zoom on my computer, so I got on her computer, but it put her picture up on here. But
this is John Musgrove.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll get to you.
All right, brother.
Yeah, all right. We're going to start with our brother Henrik and let him see if you have any questions or, and then also tell you a little bit about his history as an athlete at Compton High also. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, appreciating brother Rod and Ronaldo. I'm Gordon Pepper's homeboy.
Okay. Yeah.
Matter of fact, I have the shot put record at Compton High.
Right. Okay.
I was there in 69.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I was there in 69 when you came back from the Olympic. You was a senior and I was just a sophomore.
Okay.
And I talked to Frank Wheaton today and he told me to thank you for something, but I forgot what he said to thank you for.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Right. Yeah. I gave him a person that was really in need. So he's helping.
Okay.
Thank you. Today.
And old brother Musgrove, this is JoJo. You know me from the.
JoJo. Good to see you, brother.
All right. Anyway, Ray, appreciating, you know, the things you're talking about. You know, I try to stay on the health thing too. Like,
right.
like walking in water is big. Uh-huh. And from what I understand, you know, the walking that you've been doing is probably the reason why you develop, you know, some more of those veins that's getting the blood, you know, throughout your body.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I got a big vegetable garden. I grow my own vegetables. I go deep, so I eat that. I tell people,
right.
you know, to stop eating that stuff out them stores and these restaurants because it's full of stuff that's messing your body up, you know, with all the soda,
right.
all other stuff that it has in there. But anyway, yeah man, I got a late start. My wife changed the clocks and kind of threw me off. She had the clock too fast, so that's why I missed the start of the show. Apologize for that. But yeah, man, I remember when I was a young snotty-nosed sophomore. I remember you came back from the Olympics, boy. We partied some terrible for like 2 weeks. The whole I remember that distinctly. And plus the basketball thing that was going on at the time. But I remember when I was in junior high, and they used to have a Compton Cup at Compton High.
Right.
And I remember watching you, and you used to warm up by running to the football crossbar and kicking it with your toe.
Yeah, yes, yeah. That was really a great thing for me.
Yeah, I go way back, man. So I've been a fan all these years.
Yeah.
I think I saw you. I think I think Gordon brought you to one of our reunions.
He did, yeah.
Carson, I talked to him. And I'm also a Noreen's cousin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I that's how I introduced myself to you when we was at the reunion that time.
Right.
It's great that you know athletes can refer back to the time that we were athletes, you know, to deal with our health, you know, today. I got my brothers that just sit down on the couch and won't do nothing, and I tell them, I said, you know, back when you was an athlete, you know, you worked out to play. So why don't you work out to save your life?
There you go, right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of what we need to do. But my thing is diet, exercise, rest, and no stress. If you keep
there you go.
Balance, you know, you'll be all right. Anyway,
yeah, just a lot of a little bit of movement is definitely important, boy, I tell you. Yeah.
You gotta move. And
I
wish I had known because, like, after I finished playing football, I jogged for like 15 years. And I found out that walking, I can get the same result and take the stress off my knees from all that pounding. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
Just walk back, a brisk walk, you know,
right.
you know, will suffice. So, anyway, I just wanted to step in there and say my little bit. I ain't going to take much more of the time. I know some other participants would like to speak and ask you questions, but Gordon sent me the picture, you know, that you and him took at your book sign.
So, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I'm gonna get that as soon as I can and check it out. Well,
appreciate him doing that. Yeah.
All right,
thanks. The next person, we got some top eight legends on here with Ken Smith. I'm going to save John for last because he's the most traveled. But Brother Ken, who was one of the most outstanding football players to come out of Compton High, and one of the, I went out to play football at Compton College, and he was a strong safety, and he was trying to show me the ropes. But when they had to run and jump on their stomach, you know, 10 yards and dive on your stomach, I kept running back to the gym. Hey, buddy, y'all can have it. But anyway, Ken, do you have any questions or any concerns? We can't hear you. You're on mute. You're on mute. You're on mute. You know how to turn it off? You don't have nobody to help you get the mute off? Okay, we'll get back to you. But that's Ken Smith, one of my good friends, who's always setting up my breakfasts and lunches with all some of the former Tar Babes of that era. But anyway, John?
Yes.
Come on, brother. He's John Musgrove. Another Compton High, successful entrepreneur, a consultant, traveler all over the continent, strong brother. So, John, why don't you go ahead and greet your other Tar Babe brother, Reynaldo.
Yeah, well, I just saw him last week. I was at the book signing, and so my book just came today.
So good.
I still want to get it autographed. But the first time I saw Ray was at the district meet for the junior high schools, and they were being held at Compton High School, and the buzz was they got this ninth grader that is doing stuff that can't nobody believe. So I'm ditching class to go out here to see this phenom, and was not disappointed. I mean, it was incredible. You know, and to see what he went on to do and accomplish, you know, throughout his career was just outstanding. You know, it's one of the things that we look back as Tar Babes and we talk about iconic figures and legends that come out of Compton High School. And Reynaldo is truly one of those legends, those phenoms that have came out of the ranks of the Tar Babes. It's just good to say. And check this out, JoJo. I was talking to Ray, and he was telling me that he lived in Harbor City for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I went to live down there before I moved to Compton. Yeah, it was.
Did you go to Fleming or Normand there?
You know, I don't remember the elementary school that I went to, but I know we just made those projects. It was down there. I think it was on the Normandy or somewhere down there. But yeah, I was down in Harbor City for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Hey, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, Ken.
All right, this is Ken Smith. Sorry, John, but I just wanted to butt in because Ronaldo, my sister-in-law, was out at Harbor City. I used to go out directly off of 253rd.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I guess that's where it all started, out at Harvard.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, before they put in the, what is that, Kaiser over there off of Vermont and what's the name? You know, it used to be that little swamp there that the gator used to run through there.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But I remember because, heck, man, I was, you know, as a kid in Harvard City, man, Harvard College, I mean, in the hospital, man, I was almost there every week, man, you know, getting hurt. And, man, I remember going there a lot. One month I stopped and I didn't go. And they called my mother and asked, is Ray coming in this weekend? You know, this sometimes, because I stayed in Harvard City, man, the hospital down there, you know, getting hurt. I guess experience.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Slough. Call that the slough.
Yeah.
I used to climb down in there when they was putting all the pipes and stuff down in there.
Yeah, Ronaldo, we back to Compton High, you know, I was a senior when when you came in. I believe you were Mike Hopwood.
Yeah.
Yeah. At that time, we used to play a lot of ball. I remember a lot of times we had some heated games. and then Newman that came over. And as a matter of fact, I saw you what, 2 or 3 years ago up at the state meet. Do you have plans on going up again this year?
Yeah, I do. I'm coaching at King High School out in Riverside.
Oh, Riverside, okay.
So I have two jumpers. Well, one of my girls, she jumped 5'2" for me. Right now she's at 5'2", and I expect her to do better, and the guy expects to do better. You know, hopefully they'll make a state meet. You know, so
okay. Well,
we'll see what happens. You know, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Listen, you on mute again, Ken? But John, you have any more comments? Okay.
I'll hit her back.
All right, John. You have any more comments you want to make before we go to the other guests?
No, I'm good.
Okay, then. Because I got some issues.
Say hi to John.
We're gonna go with
John in a minute. So, how you been doing, Musgrove?
I'm good, man. Good to see you, Ken.
Yeah, it's nice seeing you and hearing you. Anyway, I can't see you. But it's nice here. Right. How's the missus?
Everything's going well.
Okay,
you know,
that's
hit me up, man. We can catch up.
Okay. Also, Ronaldo, when you mentioned your routine and everything, and like you say, athletes, mm-hmm. you know, they should keep that mentality of mm-hmm. keeping their body toned and in condition. And I got Mike Modest. I wish we could reach out to him because, like you say, Ray, you walk from across the room, you know, and I need somebody to help me motivate him because I live in Paramount and he lives in Inglewood, and I often all the time I say, hey, look here, man, coming by, we're gonna walk, and he's always making excuses. So I need somebody else to help me motivate him because I'm an athlete. I've always been an athlete, and I just don't believe athletes are supposed to let their body go to crap.
Yeah, we're not. Well, you know, unique thing about it, he called me last week and he wanted a book. So the book came in, so I just mailed it today to Miley. Okay. So Mike, you know, I called him and let him know the book is on the way. He should get it Friday or Saturday.
Okay.
Because he said he wanted to read it and, you know, try to motivate himself and hopefully he'll read it.
Okay. Right. Well, you know, well, keep it.
Get
keep
something
it,
out of it. But, yeah.
I'm keep him lifted up because he needs us, you know, more than me to motivate.
Right. Okay.
Teamwork.
There we
all
go.
Right, we're going to go with the good doctor. Good doctor, you have any questions you want to raise?
Really just a couple. It was a good story. Good to hear from you. I'm glad they brought you on. I really didn't know anything about you. I didn't follow that much, but I did a quick search when Rusky, they told me you were coming on. And only question is, yeah, I saw you... You know, you set records in high school, college. You guys won the championship, CIF championship in there when you were there. And you were quoted in an article back then saying that you rather won the CIF championship than set any kind of records in the Olympics. But I see all your accomplishments. Can you rank all your accomplishments from the CIF championship at Compton? The three titles you took at the meet in Compton. You look like you won some titles in college, and you know you did your thing in the Olympics. What was the greatest accomplishment? Can you name them from Can you rank them from your best to the last of all your experiences there?
Really, I think, you know, just winning, I don't know, they all kind of mean something to me, but, you know, doing my thing in high school, you know, actually junior high school, my thing was, you know, because I think that's where it all started for me, and that's when I was getting probably the flack that people were saying, ah, you won't go no further. And, you know, my thing was to not prove to anybody, but just show people that I was motivated to, you know, to keep going, you know, and to do things. So I think junior high school was my best memory of jumping because I had so much fun. And also it was so hard, you know, it was hard to do. It wasn't an easy thing to do. And it reminded me so much of all the experiences that I went through life, you know, because a lot of things in life that I went through wasn't, you know, wasn't easy. And all I had to do was think about trying to get past junior high school, you know, and, you know, getting out of school, for instance, you know, getting my grades up. You know, because if it hadn't been for sports, you know, I think that I probably wouldn't have went any further because, you know, I wasn't the smartest kid in school. But through sports, I knew that if I didn't get that C average, I wasn't going to jump. And it happened to me at Willowbrook when I broke the school record. And they told me I was ineligible and I couldn't jump again. And, you know, that kind of hurt my heart. And that was the first time I think I really cried and was wondering, how can I, you know, get past this? And so through sports, it helped me because I knew that if I love the high jump, then I can love to, you know, get through academically, you know. And that was the, like I did with sports, I practiced. And all I had to do, to get my grades was just practice what I didn't understand. But it didn't hit me until, you know, I was ineligible. So those were the hard days. And once I passed that through, you know, in junior high school, and I felt that, you know, I can, you know, accomplish anything I want just by working hard and just thinking about the times when I thought I couldn't do it and, you know, and thinking of a way to do it. So, you know, sports was just a crutch for me to get through school. And I think everybody that needs to get by something, you know, you got to have a positive thing and a negative thing, you know, to work together and just work with, you know. And that's all I did. I didn't want to, you know, fail in anything. And so I, you know, almost had to be an engineer in everything that I did. I had to just figure it out, you know, see how I can put it together and work. And, you know, that's the way I, you know, took life. So junior high school was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, not being able to, because I wouldn't have went any further if I hadn't been with Willowbrook and being ineligible and then figuring out how can I succeed, you know.
Okay. All right. Doc, any more?
No, that's it.
Okay. Brother Mashinda, he's there?
Yes, sir. Good evening.
All right.
Thank you, Brother Ronaldo Brown. You know, your story is very inspirational, and I appreciate you sharing with us tonight.
Well, thank you.
Yes, sir. Very inspirational, and I'm sure that you still have that impact on the people that you come in contact with. Your determination, tenacity, your drive is off the charts. You know, I feel your energy, and you know, I'm glad to be acquainted with you on this call. Did you get acquainted back at, you said it was, I want to buy the book. I see it says 1968 Olympian. Were you acquainted with John Carlos and Tommy Smith?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We still talk. All of us still talk today, you know. So, you know, the 68 team, we're always doing stuff together. And, sure. You know,
yeah.
Come out to California.
How was your position back then? You know, how did you feel, you know, during that time? I know that they saluted, you know, Black Power. You know, what kind of effect did that have on you during that time?
Well, I was all with it, you know, because back then, you know, at in 68, you know, with so much stuff going on, you know, with especially with Harry talking about, you know, boycotting the Olympics, and you know, the Kennedys, you know, being shot, Martin Luther King being killed, and Black Panther. I mean, there was so much going on, you know. So I kind of was into news and, you know, keeping up with things, you know. And my goal was not to go to the Olympic Games and win, you know, win a medal. All I wanted to do was just be an Olympian, you know, because, you know, at that time, Black athletes, you know, they didn't get the opportunities like the white athletes did, you know, being commentators, getting jobs, you know, and it's just my opinion. I saw this happening. And so, when I saw how, you know, an athlete would go to the Olympic Games and get a gold medal, come home, and then he had to just work just like a normal person would have to work. You know, they didn't get the big entertainment stuff. You know, the only one that did that was Muhammad Ali, and I listened to him a lot, you know, talking about what, you know, they didn't want the gold medals when they won them, and, you know, and it didn't mean anything to them, you know. And so I said, well, heck, I don't want a gold medal either. All I want to do is just be an Olympian and just, you know, enjoy life as an Olympian, not as a gold medal winner, because it was just that stereotype that you get a gold and you should live like this and have this. But I knew it wasn't going to happen for me. I figured I was going to go to the Olympic Games and just have to find a job. And that's what I did when I came back. You know, my first job, you know, working was in Huntington Park. I worked at the car wash. You know, I went to the car wash, and not just because I was young, you know, I had to have a job. You know, people would see me, they would recognize, you're Olympian. What are you doing at the car wash? So the Olympics, it didn't mean any, you know, it meant a lot to me, but it didn't mean I was going to have, you know, they expected me to have, you know. I said, well, I got to make a living. And so, you know, and I really didn't, you know, look at the Olympics as a glory thing, because I looked at all the other Olympians, like I said, a lot of them were embarrassed because they got the medals. They didn't have the jobs that they wanted, you know. I couldn't get what they needed. And I didn't want to live like that. I just wanted to live a natural life and enjoy myself. And, you know, it worked out the way I did it. You know, so I like the way I, you know, did what I did. And if I had to do it again, I'd do it that way again. You know? So people were kind of a little angry about me saying that, why didn't I want a gold medal? Because it was just something personally that I didn't want. You know, I didn't want the gold. All I wanted to do is just participate in the Olympic Games. You know, and I did that. So it was good the way I did it, you know. To me,
Mishinda, any other questions?
No, that'll be it. I really appreciate it. Look forward to purchasing
the book. In the book, he has a whole section dealing with the protests and the athletes. And
oh, yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off. Let me tell you about that Mexico City. When we got to Mexico City, the only reason Tommy and John did, you know, we all talked about, you know, a protest, and it was an individual thing. I just mentioned this, but the main reason we protest when we got there, we found out that, you know, 3,400 university kids were murdered, and nobody ever talked about that. Nobody even knew about the killings of the students at the University of Mexico. So when we heard about that, then John and Tom, Tommy, you know, they decided just to do their own protest like that. You know, everybody had their own protest that they was going to do. And, you know, there was a unity thing. It wasn't a black power thing, you know, where just because they rose, you know, did the fist, it wasn't just because of black folks. It was, you know, it was for everybody, you know, showing the unrest that, you know, that people were having, you know, in the world, you know, happening to people in the world. And so it's for a united thing for everybody. It wasn't just a black power thing. They just made it a black power thing because they didn't want to talk about the killings at the University of Mexico. And you'll read about that in the book, you know.
All right. Good, good. That's something new, but I got some information on that also. Brother Rasha Key, who's a Compton Tar Baby, one of the most outstanding basketball players that came out under the coach Eddie Thomas, and he's the one that set this platform for us to have special guests, and we're going to get John Musgrove on here to talk about his international travels and business organizations as soon as I can get online on him. And I think Brother Hembrick got one, and he'll be one of our next guests. But right now, Rasha Key, do you have any points you want to raise?
Yeah, I do, but my aunt is here, so I wanted to see if she wanted to make a comment or ask some questions. Hembrick's daughter.
Okay.
Hi. Yes, I just was listening in. I didn't want to make any comments. I was just happy to hear Mr. Brown's story. Thank you.
All right.
Well, thank you.
I thought that was another one of Joe's. He had two computers on.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah, just a very excellent example of how to overcome and strive. I'm very appreciative for you sharing, you know, your story with us, and I'm happy to be here to hear it. So I wanted to ask you about the basketball. You know, I played at Compton, and at times it just seemed like it was tough because when we came out of junior high school, we were like the tops of the tops. Like, you had a good junior high experience. Brother Doctor on here and I, you know, we played basketball and football and track. We did track, and we dominated as ninth graders. We were so dominant. Whereas if we would have took our show to it seemed like we could have took it anywhere and been, you know, had top achievement. But when we got to Compton, it seemed like it all came down. You mentioned people was telling you that, you know, you're not going to do this, you're not going to do that. It seemed like we entered into a lion dens of jealousies, and it just didn't work out. You know, it didn't work out well. And I didn't have a real good experience at Compton High, even though I was, you know, a pretty good player and went to a college on a scholarship. But I wanted to ask you about what made those teams so good? What was it about those 2 years that just made it so special?
I think it was mainly because Louis, Larry, and Demo, and you know, the first five, and Louis, we all grew up together. You know, of course, everybody that played, you know, went to Cressy Park, or, you know, and we played our games there. And wherever we played, we all, you know, even if we went to Mona Park, you know, that's where we all met you at, you know, over there, you know, Cressy and Mona Park. But we had those two parks, and we just traveled together and did everything together. And we kind of knew each other, I guess, you know. And even like the 68 team, we all played, you know. We just played together and we kind of knew each other, you know. Even if we couldn't play, because a lot of times you couldn't play, couldn't get in a game at Cressy Park unless you was good. We wasn't, you know, at that stage yet. We would probably be the ball boy at Cressy Park, you know. or if somebody didn't show up, we'd show, they just let us sit there and say, pass the ball, or don't shoot. So we just, you know, we'd go outside and play together, and we'd be, you know, passing and talking, and if we, you know, went to a party or something, all of us, we just hung out with each other a lot, and we got to a point where we knew each other, and we just had that, you know, just that, that grant for winning, you know, and playing basketball. We just, you know, stayed positive. We figured that if we play together, we know where everybody is, you know, and we just passed the ball, you know. We may have one or two that want to shoot a lot, but we didn't care, you know. Either we're rebound or whatever, put it back or whatever. But we just had a tight-knit, you know, group, you know, for the 69 team. The 68 team was just about the same. You know, they hung out, and we just had to wait our turn to, you know, do our thing too. So, and we learned from the 68 team how to, you know, keep things going, you know, and we just carried it over to 69. So it's just a tight-knit thing where we hung out together and we just knew each other. And we wanted to win. We had a good coach too, you know, of course, Bill Armstrong. He, you know, he instilled in us that, you know, we can do this. And we did it.
Okay. Now, every team has a glue guy. That's mm-hmm. just, you know, so who would you say? Because I know Louie. I worked with Keith Lee. Mm-hmm. I worked with Hopwood. So who was the glue guy that kept everything together?
You know what? I think we all had hard in it, you know, where we didn't really, you know, Larry, of course, was probably, you know, if you had to say the best on the team, you know, we all just knew what we had to do. And I think the more we talked and laughed, I think we all had the same attitude, you know, as just hanging together and doing stuff together, you know. So I don't think we really had a big leader, you know, but if the paper, you know, if they wrote about, you know, what happened at Compton High School, of course, Larry would be the one that they say was leader or whatever. But I think we all were leaders, you know.
Okay, so you guys just had heck of a chemistry and had togetherness and all of that. That's wonderful. That's good to hear. Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Mm. Well, let me just run a few things. First of all, Compton High had a culture of winning in basketball. They had won the championship with Joe Davis and Mike Jacobs, Harvey Dillon. And they had a tradition of either winning the championships, and they had a Compton tournament in basketball. So it was a basketball school. I wish I would have went there. But I'm glad I went to Centennial, but I still wish I would have went there because the focus was on basketball. And they came out like the Globetrotters and warming up with Sweet Georgia Brown. Some intimidating stuff that they used to do to make you think they were pros, you know, and they had talent. They had a lot of good talent. Dwight Taylor, Larry Hollifield, Tommy Campbell, who could shoot with either hand. I mean, you know, it's not just the coaching alone. But even though Armstrong kept y'all together and Newman worked with you as you wrote in your book, he taught you how to play, gave you the drills, and gave you the inspiration that you could do this. And that's what you say in the book. And that you loved his, I think he had, what, four drills that he would mix up as you wrote in the book. But I just want to tell everyone, get the book. Get it out of my, and when you ask a question, what was one of the greatest getting achievements? And it's getting over those medical conditions. But not only that, coming out of Compton, and John Musgrove know this, Ken know this, Joe Hembrick know this, and even Rasha Key know this. You know, they didn't expect us to come out alive.
Exactly.
You know, we're supposed to be the dope head, shot, murdered, or in prison. Walking around with no shirt on, are either affiliated with either the Swamps or the Lazy Loafers or one of the sets and things of this nature. And those were some big high schools in them days.
Yeah.
At that time, and I'm talking about the drill team. I mean, you thought you was at Grambling, brother, when they came out there to battle. And we used to have what they call exchange talent shows. The competition and the rivalry between Centennial and Compton, you had your own stadium called Ramzar.
Exactly.
That hosted the Compton Cup in track. Yeah. I mean that was historic, you know. And you came out with Ulysses Williams and other individuals that stood out in track and athletes. So Compton High was the centerpiece of producing many great athletes that went on, like Ronaldo, and did great things. And his book outlined, you have to read because it starts out when he was young, how he went through all these different schools, how he met his wife, how he dealt with all the medical issues. And then at the same time, he talks about the Olympics. He talks about his great coaches, his great friends that he met, and how they stayed connected and interrelated, his community activities, his activities with professional organizations and service groups. It is outstanding read. And once you start reading it, it flows. So him and Carol did a good job of letting it flow and things of this nature. And so it's just an excellent read. And I urge everyone, and even when we blast this, and if you get the book, you know, we always have a reunion with Arthur Levias or somebody. We'll have a picnic where everybody gets together, take the book. Ronaldo going to be there. Him and his wife make every set. Right. You understand? Like you said, if it's somewhere to go, Ronaldo going. That's what he wrote in the book. That's what they said about him in the book. Beautiful family with grandchildren, great-grandchildren. I mean, it's just full of things that make you want to just enjoy yourself, and you emerge in it because you begin reflecting on your own personal life. Ronaldo gave me a lot of advice about dialysis. I do my best to try to follow it. But you know, man, I fall off the wagon and I get back on it. But boy, it's rough because he's a disciplinarian. You understand? He got that discipline.
Being on dialysis is a scary thing, you know, and you hear so much.
It's a depressing thing for me.
You want it to happen right away, and it ain't going to happen right away. It's going to take a minute, you know. That's the thing we have to go through. Yeah.
When I see Ken, and now I see John, and John, and his wife has done some magnificent things in the community and throughout Long Beach, and his trips to Africa and his businesses that he emerged in. I mean, a lot of great things come out of Compton.
Can you hear me? I can't get out of here without, you know, you bringing up the 66 Compton basketball team with Eli Curtis and Bobby Watkins and James.
But Freddie Dunn was just as crazy as everybody.
But you know, you guys were all around the 66 team. You know, they took took state too. That's right.
Yeah, okay. Jesus out of going. We the last team that beat Compton High before they went on.
Right.
That night, I hit the last shot. I just want to bring that up. We was intimidated, very intimidated, because you had so much talent. But I just want to say about this book, I mean, when he tells you about the Olympics, when you went there and how they had to get acclimated to the conditions and the situation. It's just a beautiful read. And I just want to thank Rinaldo for agreeing. As soon as I got the book, because as soon as I heard that he had the book, I couldn't make it to the book signing. But I called Rinaldo, I said, congratulations. And yeah. I tried to order the book through Born the Novel. They thought it'd take 2 weeks, a week. You had to join their membership and get, no. So I went on Amazon, I got it in 3 days, and I have not stopped. I've not put it down. I mean, I love it, man. I just want to tell you, thank you, thank you, thank you for being on. And we're going to put this on our website. Rashi Key has recommendations for me. We're going to do that. And second, I'm going to every time I get a chance, I'm going to put it on my Facebook announcement.
Well, I appreciate that.
And urge everyone I can. As we get
want to tell you one other thing. I got a call from Barnes & Noble yesterday, and they were so grateful and happy that, you know, that book signing, you know, that we had, couple weeks ago. They want us to do another one, and we have a date. So it'll be April the 2nd. So if you get a book or don't have a book, you can come April the 2nd, buy a book, or bring your book for me to sign it. But they really want me to do it again at Barnes & Noble on April the 2nd.
Which Barnes & Noble is that?
That's in the one in Rancho Cucamonga.
Rancho Cucamonga, okay.
And that's on a Saturday.
That's on a Saturday.
What time?
They want to do it from, I think, 1 to 4.
1 to 4?
Okay.
I'll see you there.
I'll send the address out to you, you know, again, for those who don't have the address. But April the 7th, I'll be doing another book signing there. And because at this last one they had, the book sold out before it even started. You know, we was on our way, Carol and I was on our way there, and they told us, oh, can you bring some more books? We are sold out. So all the ones they ordered, they sold out. But people were able to buy books there, you know, at Barnes & Noble. And so, you know, if it happened again, you can order them from Barnes & Noble right there. But when you get them, you know, I'll make it my point to come out and autograph for you.
Well, I'll see you on the 2nd.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me ride out there, too, after dialysis. But let me just say this. Rashi Key, you want to announce who we... first of all, Paul, John, Ken, and Rinaldo, we are on every Monday and Wednesday.
Okay.
And if you have someone that you think have a story that we could get out to the community, and y'all are welcome to join us. We have deep discussions with Joe Hemrick with regards to history, religion, and spirituality. Okay. And we have deep health things with Brother Rashi Key. We have courageous questioning by the good doctor, Mashinda. We have, this is a Women's History Month, and I didn't know my eye was on. I thought that was another one of Joe's, had two computers, but this is History Month. People don't know that the Black women in 1968 also protested.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was a sister that won the gold medal in 64 and in 68.
Yeah.
And she wore a blue.
Wyoming Tires, yeah.
Wyoming Tires. She wore dark blue pants when she won the race. And the sisters that won the relay gold medal dedicated their medals to Carlos and them. And people forget the white boy from Australia that was on the stand with him, who also did a protest. And he died. And John and Tommy, who I know personally, also went to his funeral and gave him respect for even encouraging and supporting. I really believe he gave them the black glove. One had left one on, and he is the one that encouraged it, that they do something. So I don't know how deep that was, but I may be wrong, But
you're right.
So those are the things that we need to go into. And I want to get some more information on those 32 kids that died. I see you want, Joe, you have anything else you want to say?
Yeah, real quick. I want to holler at one of my neighborhood legends, Ken Smith. Last time I talked to you was at Mike Owens' funeral.
Mike Owens, Joe Hembry.
Hey, how you doing?
I used to coach with Philosopher Brown, your boy Al Brown.
Yeah,
and I used to shine shoes up in the square when I was 12, 13 years old. And I used to talk to your father all the time.
Yeah, he ran that square. He ran that square.
Yeah, I witnessed the many arguments that he had up there. If he needed to go home against you, I would shut some gas, man. You better get the hell out of here. Kids to come up here. You better get on your way. But anyway, I just wanted to holler at you about that, man. I think last time I talked to you was at Mike Owens' replay.
Right.
And the beautiful thing about coming up in Compton, when we was coming up, we played with each other, not machines.
Right.
And we walked to the party.
Yeah.
And we walked downtown Compton to the movie show. Yeah. And we made a lot of fun at the drive-in, broke up a lot of speakers. Drove off with a lot of speakers. You understand? So we had a relationship that's different than this new generation
of
automation and technology. And I mean, you know, if you had a fight, it was a fist fight most of the time.
Right.
And then, you know, the next day, y'all be cool. But anyway, Shaquille, you want to go ahead and close us out with what's going to be on? And John, I got to get in contact with you. I'll get your number and stuff because I want to get you on as soon as possible because I've been reading your Facebook, brother, following you. You know, you got stuff that we need to learn about in your experience.
Joe got all my information.
All right, I'll get it from you.
All right.
And tell your house, your wife, I said hello.
I will.
Because her and Carmen Abdullah was good friends.
Yeah,
that's right. Go ahead, Rashiki.
Okay, we're going to have to postpone the show for Wednesday because I have back to school. Well, it's an open house. And then my daughter was supposed to be the guest. And I try to postpone it to 8 o'clock.
Yes, back to school night.
And she wanted to go ahead and just postpone it. So she's going to come on. Can you guys hear me? Hello?
Yeah.
Rob, you can hear me?
I hear you. Yeah.
Okay, so she will come on June 1st. And then we have another Compton High graduate that's coming on the 23rd, and that's Miss Benita Meeks, and she's going to be talking about real estate. Her daughter was on a few weeks ago, maybe about a month ago, so she'll be on another Compton High grad, graduated in 75. So we keeping it Compton around here at times. So okay, so each one
next,
teach
week, next Monday we're going to have Cliff Pruitt who played basketball, and he said he's been doing a lot of work in reparations, and he has a plan that he wants to discuss part two of his plan. He was on before about reparations, you know, the repairing us from the Holocaust of enslavement, and so he'll be on, and then we're just going to just keep on flowing with the community and keep on flowing. And like I said, Ronaldo, John, and Ken, if you know anybody that you think we can get on the show, and then y'all can tune in anytime you want. You're a welcome guest all the time. And, you know, this is how we do it. We just flow. And trying to use this technology to reach the community. And Ronaldo, this book helps a lot of people. when you talk about walking and exercising and how you overcome the challenges of health, I'm talking about heart, prostate, and kidney, and then overcome the doubters, as you said in the book, that didn't believe you'd make the team, and then didn't believe you're going to do anything when you got there, and you made them all bag up. So we want to thank you again. The grains of sand are few compared on the ocean floor compared to the many thanks we offer you, Reynaldo, and we hope to keep in contact. And you can tune in to find out who's on the show by going to Community Education Network and just scroll down. And if it's somebody you're interested in, you want to hear, you and when we do get John Musgrove on, we're going to put a blast out like we did for you, Reynaldo. So thank you, everybody. This was a beautiful set. It was a beautiful thing to have the connections with all the beautiful people. Thank you. All right, then.
Appreciate you. Right. Each one teach one, Conscious Corner. Have a good evening.
All right, then.
Thank you.
Good time.